Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Gunsmoke, Rawhide, Perry Mason, the Rifleman, Father Knows Best. 50 years ago, TV's fall lineup was flooded with shows like those. Shows about men. Rough and tumble men, strong men, funny men. Today, television's gender profile has pretty much flipped. From Prime Suspect to Whitney to New Girl to the Playboy Club, this fall's new lineup has especially turned to women. TV with women out front. But there are still those bunny suits and stewardess hats. This hour on Point, we'll look at what's going on with women on television. You can join the conversation. What do you see in all these women out front in the fall schedule? What about the retro bits? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We'll hear later in this hour from a woman writer for one of the biggest shows in primetime comedy today, NBC's Parks and Recreation. But first, joining me now from Los Angeles is Mary McNamara, TV critic for the Los Angeles Times and author of The Starlet and Oscar Season. Mary McNamara, thanks very much for being with us today.
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. It's wonderful to have you. Also with us from Glen Ellyn, Illinois, is Maureen Ryan, critic for AOL-TV, former TV maven for the Chicago Tribune. Maureen Ryan, welcome to you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Mary, let me come first to you. You're right there in L.A. What's going on with all these women in all these shows and right out front in this new season?
Well, one thing, they're correcting a huge wrong. I mean, there was just a study you printed from the University of San Diego saying that in the 2010-2011 season, the number of women roles on TV, you know, took a huge hit. So you're seeing a little bit of a corrective measure, but it is kind of, you know, it is very astonishing to sort of see this many female characters and also female written shows, particularly the comedies. So I think that we're seeing, you know, things are becoming more balanced, and that would be great.
Maureen, the studio's one audience. So does it mean that they think that the American television watching audience wants to see more women?
I think so, and I think, you know, maybe it's a recognition to some degree that the majority of the primetime viewing audience is actually female, so it behooves them to not, you know, forsake that marker, make those viewers make, you know, feel that they're accepted and welcomed. And I actually think there's a few different things going on. I think this is part of a trend this season toward bigger, higher concept shows. I think after the economic kind of contraction of the last couple of years, it seems to me the studios and the networks really circled the wagons and kept on doing the same old stuff, most of which failed and failed miserably. But, you know, you've seen a regime change at some networks, and there's also been, I think, something of a recognition that to kind of make it in the current pop culture zeitgeist, you've got to have a big idea or a big concept or something that's easily sellable in a 10-second promotional spot. And, you know, I think Pan Am has that. You know, it's Playboy Club has that name recognition. And I'm with Mary. I think the idea that these new comedies are not just starring women but are written by women is a very interesting trend as well. And I think maybe there's partly a generational thing going there, that perhaps, you know, a new generation of executives and writers are coming up and just really kind of correcting a wrong from the past, and that all or most comedies were pretty much written or created by men.
Well, let's look at the high concept in, for example, Pan Am, let alone a Cotton Bunny Tale. But here's the new ABC. It's kind of a period drama, early 60s, Pan Am stewardesses. Well, they're up there. They're in the sky. They're in those nifty blue old-fashioned stewardess uniforms. Here's a little bit.
Are you wearing your girdle?
Yes, ma'am. Oh. Is that necessary?
A girdle doesn't stand up and announce itself. There's a rip in your stocking.
Yes, I know. Can you help me? My flight leaves in less than an hour.
How long have you been flying?
3 weeks and 2 days.
I have an extra pair. We're on the same crew. Follow me, Butte.
Not too dark, Miss Valois. This isn't a cabaret.
Yes, Miss Havemeyer.
Okay, high concept maybe, but Mary McNamara, where is this concept going with us?
Well, I mean, Pan Am is an answer to Mad Men. I mean, Mad Men sort of changed or broadened sort of, you know, the period where we could deal with things. I get very nervous. I mean, obviously Pan Am is a better show than Playboy Club, but I get very nervous when we have just as that scene that you just played where you have, like, these shows that want to have it both ways. that want to show, oh, wasn't it awful when women had to do these things, but let's watch it. It's kind of cute. There's like there's a quaintness about the way that it's portrayed that makes me very uncomfortable. And I think that, you know, the draw of the 50s, the early 60s, is that you get to address sort of the war between the sexes in a much broader way than you can in a modern show. Modern shows assume, whether legitimately or not, a sort of gender parity. And so the banter or the tension becomes personal between the characters, between the sassy gal and the guy who won't commit, or the gal who won't commit and the sassy guy. But when you take it back to the early 60s, you can actually look at things. It can be symbolic of a huge shift, where women really were defined by biology in terms of what they could do, and men really were in charge. And so that makes an interesting gender play. The problem is, with some of these shows, is they insert essentially modern characters into period pieces and then just get all playful with the stuff like sexual discrimination, which is not funny and wasn't changed by women having witty comebacks. It was changed by organization. It was changed by social revolution. It was changed by the unions. You know, the stewardess union was one of the strongest unions in the 70s and the 80s, and I'm seriously doubting Pan Am is going to address that.
And yet, this Mad Men effect, if that's what it is, is strong. It's not just Pan Am. As you say, it's the Playboy Club also. Here's a little scene where the bunny mother, talk about Back to the Future, or maybe not, just plain back, but Carolyn, played by Laura Benanti, makes sure that her bunnies in the Playboy Club, with tight corsets and puffy tails, flaunt everything they can.
More curls.
More cleavage.
Come. Stand up straighter.
Lose the wedding ring. More mascara.
Smile.
Girls?
I am now your bunny mother. Like a house mother in a sorority, or a mother superior in a convent, or your mother who whips you into shape, who encourages you, teaches you. Starting now, I am in charge of all things bunny. Starting now, I will be watching all of you very closely. Because you are either the living, breathing fantasy that is the Playboy Bunny, or you're not.
Or you're not. I mean, Maureen Ryan, I'm seeing Gloria Steinem last summer when we all knew that this show was coming. And, of course, she made some of her early chops. She actually went into Playboy Club, worked there, and wrote about it way back when. And she was open. She said, okay, let's watch. Let's see how it is. Then she got to see a little bit of it, and she said, it's not going to be accurate. It was the tackiest place on earth. It was not glamorous at all. Gloria Steinem saying, I hope people boycott the show. It's just not telling the truth about that era, Maureen.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest problem with the Playboy Club, is that it completely, more so than Pan Am, dances away from anything that was interesting about that era. I mean, that's the great thing that Mad Men has done and could do, because it's on a niche cable network, is really show you the ugliest truths about the gender dynamics that were going on then. But Playboy Club is so afraid of going into that in any kind of real way that they stick a murder mystery in the pilot, which really makes pretty much no sense and is completely uninteresting. I just think that there was this big debate this summer. There was a press event where all the women in the cast were saying, oh, but this is about women being empowered, and women could be empowered in this place. And I think, you know, a lot of us in the audience were sitting, men and women critics were sitting there going, that word empowered, it means something different than the way that you're using it. So I don't know. It's like we were talking at the top of the hour about how they want to sort of draw in female viewers. I just don't think that by kind of evading the things that are at the heart of this era, or that could be interesting about that era, that they're going to do anyone any favors.
Who's the audience then, Mary? I mean, Mad Men has done very well on cable. So is the notion that anything set back in the 60s is a seller these days? Is broadcast television's twist on that just to make it a little more naked than in the Mad Men series?
Well, I want to follow up on something that Maureen just said, but the clips that you just showed. I think it's really interesting that in both of those clips, it's women telling women, this is how you have to look, this is how you have to behave. And I think that the writers they do that intentionally. It's like, that somehow women were participating in their own oppression, which is kind of funny. And so removed is the male voice. Hugh Hefner is only seen in voiceover and from the back. You don't sort of see that. So, I mean, that's very interesting. Mad Men is very popular. I think we have to be careful. Its audience is not very big. It's, mm-hmm. under 3 million usually, which on a network would die. So obviously they have to, as Maureen said, they cannot do, you know, that kind of smart social drama on a network show. So they've inserted espionage into Pan Am and a murder mystery. And I mean, the thing about Playboy Club that I found so egregious is here's a show about the Playboy Club, and the main narrative is about the man. It's about it's about a mobster or a politician with mobster ties rising. And it's almost as if they don't know, the writers do not know what to do with all these women. And with on Pan Am, again, you know, more of a wait-and-see attitude. But, you know, what I saw from the pilot were very stereotypical female characters, like here's the hipster, here's the good girl, here's the career gal. And I think that, you know, again, yes, there are more women on TV this season. We have to be careful to see what kind of women they are, whether they're just versions of an old template on what they're doing, what they're saying, what they're there for.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about women dominating the new TV season, from Prime Suspect to Pan Am to the Playboy Club. We're looking at the big profile of women in the fall lineup. Just a little bit from that, here's ABC's period drama Pan Am with its promo.
This is your life. What do you want to do with it?
In the 1960s, you could either stay at home.
I'll become a Pan Am steward.
Or see the world.
Buckle up. Adventure calls.
ABC's Pan Am takes off Sunday 10, 9 Central on ABC.
Buckle up to be a stewardess. Here's New Girl. New Fox hit comedy topped Glee in the ratings in its premiere last Tuesday. Just one of the many in the new fall lineup with a strong woman in the forefront, or strong, or adorable, or adorkable, as they're calling Zoe Deschanel, as Jess telling here her new macho roommates all about herself.
I'm kind of emotional right now because of the breakup, so I'll probably be watching Dirty Dancing at least 6 or 7 times a day. Also, I like to sing to myself a lot. A lot.
Okay, there's where we've gone. And here's from the new NBC series Prime Suspect, stars Maria Bello, the remake of the British series starring Helen Mirren. In this scene from the new series, Detective Jane Timoney, played by Bello, strong-arms her ex-husband and his new wife into being more flexible with letting her visit her son.
Listen to me. I work terrible hours, often have to leave things early. I arrive to things late. I get phone calls in the middle of the night and all day long. Never been shot, but I have been stabbed and I got lye thrown in my face once. And I'm a homicide detective, Trish. Not a policeman or a policewoman. I'm also not a divorce lawyer, but I know about going to court. So what day is Owen coming to our house?
Thursday.
They're from Prime Suspect, Maria Bello, No Bunny, Mary McNamara with the LA Times is with us, and Maureen Ryan from AOL TV. I want to bring our listeners right if we can, Mary and Maureen. Let's go to Laura calling from Spokane, Washington. Laura, thanks for calling. What are you seeing? What do you think of what's on the air?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah. You know, I was thinking that female empowerment may mean different things to different people of different generations. And to me, being academically empowered for a woman, I'm in my mid-30s, that brings power, that brings a feeling of worth to me. I'm not sure if the younger generation, maybe the cast that you mentioned, empowerment earlier, maybe thinking sexual empowerment means being able to flaunt whatever they want or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, comes in different flavors. Let's take
right,
it. Like, I don't know. Mary, Maureen, Mary, first to you. What flavors of empowerment are you seeing here? I don't even know if that's the issue, but what do you see?
You know, I think she makes a really, really good point. We're at this like sort of, you know, we like to call it post-feminist. I think we're post-feminist at this point. But this idea that women, that what once the images that once would have been seen as exploitive of women now are seen of, oh, we're owning these images. You know, you have like The Good Wife is a perfect example. So The Good Wife, one of the strongest dramas on network TV, one of the strongest female characters. Now they're sexing her up. You know, in the ads, she's, you know, she's in lingerie, she's racier. It's like
having an affair.
But that is, it's very much the message that's coming from the network and from the writers is that this is her choice. She's choosing to do this. And yet the images are very similar to a Victoria's Secret ad. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, so there is that. And, you know, I think like one of the best lines in a movie this year was when in Wild and Crazy Love, when the guy said, you know, the sexual revolution is over. We won when women started using stripper poles to work out. You know, I mean, there's kind of like this attitude that if, you know, if the women are okay with it, then it's empowering. And I think we have to be careful with that. You know, academic empowerment is not something you're seeing on network television. You're seeing, you know, sexual empowerment. You're seeing some professional empowerment. You know, you're seeing, you know, that kind of thing. But you're not seeing, you know, real life issues.
I'm not sure how much it matters if Charlie's Angels is in, you know, 1975 or 2011. Here's just a little bit from that one. I'll come to Maureen, but here's the new version of Charlie's Angels.
Safe.
Okay.
There we go.
Who are you?
You don't look like cops.
We're not. We're angels.
Maureen, where have we come? It's the angels still.
It's the angels, so everything's okay now. No, I think that it's really, I think as Mary said, it's a really confusing thing. And I think one thing that I'm kind of on my guard against is that, you know, the pendulum doesn't swing toward, you know, the television kind of tends to swing between these extremes or put women into these kind of narrow definitions. And the whole idea of empowerment is a very vague and hard thing to grasp, as your caller very astutely pointed out. There's a lot of different versions of it. But I think what we don't want to do is have a whole series of characters who are, you know, now I don't want to say the word over-empowered, but, you know, I think television tends to think, well, I know what we'll do. We'll make her really tough and really hardcore, and she can, you know, kick guys in the head and fight this and do that. And I think what you don't want to do is go between extremes of exploitation or victimization and super duper toughness. I mean, I think, you know, all the women I know or all the men I know are kind of go between one of those poles. And I think it's hard when you're trying to sell a big budget TV show to kind of make that more subtle. But I think there is a tendency to kind of, especially I saw with Prime Suspect, there's this very much this TV category of the tough woman. And one of the things I do love about the Good Wife is that sometimes she's tough, sometimes she's extremely tenacious and gets her way. And I love seeing that she enjoys that. But at the same time, other times she's confused. She's has a difficult time deciding what to do next. And I think it's that range that we're allowed to see in that show that makes me really respond to it, and I think has made a lot of viewers respond to that.
Well, let me just ask both of you, in this flood of women-led and sometimes women-read and written and produced shows, what's just plain good? I'll come first to you, Mary. I mean, what are you liking here? What are you recommending off this list of shows with women in the lead?
Well, I mean, I like Two Broke Girls. That was one of my favorite ones. I like the Zooey Deschanel character on New Girls because she is a new character. I think one of the problems with women in TV is that, as Maureen was saying, they're more limited. We won't let women characters be as elastic as we will male characters. Won't, like, let them, you know, you wouldn't see a female House. You wouldn't see, you know, a female, even with Prime Suspect, you see how the character is softened, or not softened exactly, but made more American. She's obviously heroic in a way that the original Jane Tennyson wasn't. She was a good cop, but she made mistakes and she had a lot of rough edges that, you know, even in the, were visible even in the pilot where she was, you know, she was kind of self-aggrandizing and odd. And so I think that, you know, what I like are characters that I haven't seen to, you know, before or that I haven't seen in a while. And I would say, you know, the Two Broke Girls, they remind me of Laverne and Shirley almost. You know, they're very working class. They're very, you know, it's kind of like they're talking about their jobs, even though they are talking about boys too. But in terms of like the big dramas, you know, again, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see from Pan Am. That could go either way. But, you know, I'm a fan of The Good Wife, so I'm like really looking forward to that coming back.
Let's hear, I want to see what you have to say, Maureen, about Two Broke Girls. Let's hear just a little from it. This is from the creators, first Michael Patrick King, who was right in the heart of Sex and the City, and comedian Whitney Cummings. CBS's new series, Two Broke Girls, follows the young cynical waitress, Max, played by Kat Dennings, who's forced into living with Beth Baer's character, Caroline, a former rich Manhattanite down on her luck. Here's Max taking Caroline on a tour of her new job as a low-wage waitress.
Shea Barbie.
That's Oleg. He will hit on you aggressively and relentlessly. He doesn't realize he looks like that, and I don't have the heart to tell him.
Miss, can we get some menus?
Oh, sure. Don't smile. Because it raises the bar, and then I have to smile, and I can't be doing that. It's exhausting, and I have a bad back.
Don't smile because it raises the bar. Maureen Ryan, what about Two Broke Girls and the types we're seeing here?
I really like Two Broke Girls a lot. I think it was, you know, as within the confines of a comedy, it was doing a lot of the things that I like to see. The women are allowed to be a whole variety of modes. I think Mary made an excellent point that they're, you know, women are kind of put into certain categories oftentimes. But the Two Broke Girls, these were confident women. They obviously had their share of troubles, but they, you know, at the end of the pilot for that show, they decide to embark on a venture that is their venture, and they feel good about it, and they have a goal, and they're going somewhere, and they're really in charge of their own fate, and I like seeing that a lot. If I don't know if you wanted to hear from me about a show that I'm kind of excited about.
Yes,
in
please.
Terms of it hasn't aired yet. It comes up on Sunday, October 2nd, I believe. It's called Homeland, and I think that is a really interesting show for a lot of reasons, and one of them is
it's with Claire Danes, right?
Yes, Claire Danes and Damian Lewis. It's very much an update of the many political thrillers we've had since 9/11, and it really takes that whole dynamic of security and safety into a whole new realm with some interesting characters. And I love Claire Danes' character because she's a lot of different things, and it takes an amazing performer to pull off the many different varieties of experience that character goes through, because you really, a lot of the show hinges on the fact that you don't know if she's just got an obsessional nature that is taking her down the garden path, or if she's really onto something that might affect, you know, America and the possibilities of terrorism. So I love the ambiguity of that. I think that's a wonderful thing to explore, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of that.
It's Claire Danes as a CIA agent in Homeland, where there's a returned POW American troop who she thinks may be secretly connected to Al-Qaeda. Here's a little bit from one that's not new, but definitely Woman Out Front, and has had a pretty great critical success. NBC's series Parks and Recreation returned last week, fourth season. Amy Poehler here sets the stage for the new wave of TV's lead women with her character Leslie Knope, a faithful government employee determined to make a name for herself and pave the way for all women.
You know, government isn't just a boys' club anymore. Women are everywhere. It's a great time to be a woman in politics. Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, me, Nancy Pelosi. You know, I like to tell people, you know, get on board and buckle up, because my ride's going to be a big one. And if you get motion sickness, you know, put your head between your knees, because Leslie Knope's stopping for no one.
Stopping for no one. There's that buckle up again. We've got a writer from Parks and Recreation with us today, and really happy to have her. Aisha Muharrar is with us. She's a writer for Parks and Recreation, former writer for Mitch Hurwitz's Fox series Sit Down, Shut Up, former vice president of the Harvard Lampoon. Aisha, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
We hear a lot about how there are not nearly as many women writing as there are men. Now we've got this big flood of shows with women out front. Does that mean that more of what we're hearing and seeing has been written by women now, Aisha, or not?
I think that's the case, at least with the new fall comedies. That's definitely the case. I mean, New Girl, it's written by Liz Merriweather, created by Liz. And When You Come In is behind Whitney and Two Broke Girls. Emily Kaffnick wrote Suburgatory, which is on ABC, and Emily Spivey wrote Up All Night. And Emily, the two Emilys are actually, they were writers on Parks and Recreation, so I'm particularly proud of those shows and those writers.
So do you see something new happening? Do you hear it? Do you see it, Aisha, in the scripts that are coming out now, in the work you're doing? Is there some new terrain opening up here with this big number of women-led shows?
Oh, I think it's always great when there's a new trend towards more developed female characters. I just hope that, you know, it doesn't become just a trend of like, okay, we tried doing more shows with women in the lead this fall, and if one doesn't work, then it's like, okay, let's never do that again. But I think television has always kind of been the place for strong female characters to go. I was listening in earlier, hearing how there are just more women watching TV than movies. So I feel like that's always been the place to go for strong female characters, and we're just kind of in a great, weird bubble where we happen to have a lot of new series this fall.
Maureen Ryan, you're there in Chicago watching all this, but you've also seen the numbers, no doubt, about the number of female writers in Hollywood. It's gone up and down, and I think most recently, the last I saw anyway, it was down again, Maureen.
Yeah, there's a study done every year by San Diego State University, the Center for Women in Television and Film, and they do a snapshot of the industry. They take a random episode from every show on the primetime networks and just determine how many women are employed on that episode. And the number reached an all-time high of 35% in 2006-2007 season. And then the most recent season, 2010-2011, it had dropped a lot to 15%. And that number tends to bounce around because it is that snapshot. But it's gone down significantly, and it's gone down. The trend line is directly down. And even if you look at the Writers Guild stats, the number of women working as writers has never gone above 28%. And so what I find is that you do see women portrayed on television a lot, but there's something I think about is the subject versus object situation. You know, is she the subject of the story? Is it her story? Is it something she's interested in? Or is she the love object or hate object or some kind of object that a man is interested in or needs help from? You know, so to me, I think we're seeing more situations in television shows where they're kind of like the authors of that journey, or they're the, you know, very integrated into the main arc of that narrative, and they're not merely being reacted to or being desired or being, you know, disliked or, you know, being asked for help. You know, they're not like in a supportive role necessarily all the time. And that's really what I look for when I want to watch a television show, is really characters, male and female, who can surprise me and who are on interesting journeys that I really kind of emotionally and intellectually buy into.
Aisha, do you see the needle moving on that subject-object spectrum of women in TV?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I also think that, yes, it's definitely moving, and I think there have been shows even before this that were very capable of doing that. I think it's great as far as, I think our show and 30 Rock are two shows where there's a clear female lead, and also there are other female supporting characters. I look for that, too. I always think it's wonderful when there's a lead female character who's interesting and well-developed. But I think it's also great if her friend, her best friend character, is also someone who's interesting and well-developed. You know, that's, I feel like, a good sign that there are multiple women in the show that are all interesting. And it's not like, okay, there's one interesting woman, and then the rest are still playing that kind of supporting role.
Does it free you up as a woman writer when your lead is a woman, when you've got Amy Poehler out front?
Free me up
to write the story the way you want to write it, to maybe get into areas that if it was a guy, you were writing for a guy, you'd be expected to do something different.
Well, I feel particularly fortunate to be able to write for Amy Poehler just because she's incredibly, incredibly talented and basically a comic genius. And I think it's you know, at least now, this fall, it doesn't seem so rare, but when I first got the job about 2 or 3 years ago, it did seem kind of rare to have a chance to write for a funny female character who wasn't someone's wife or someone's girlfriend, who had her own story and her own goals and her own direction. So that was very refreshing, and I was very excited to write for that. But, yeah, we have a lot of great characters on our show that I love writing for. And our show was created by two men who just also happen to be very smart and very willing to write female stories.
Well, when Amy Poehler marched up on the Emmy stage there the other night, she seemed to be announcing that something new is arriving here. Aisha Muharrar, writer for NBC's Parks and Recreation, joining us today from L.A. Thank you so much for being with us for a minute here, Aisha.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about women dominating the new television season. In show after show after show, women are out front. We've been joined from Los Angeles by Mary McNamara, television critic for the Los Angeles Times, and from Glen Ellyn, Illinois, Maureen Ryan. She's television critic for AOL TV. Let's go right to our callers, Jennifer in Seymour, Connecticut. Jennifer, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would like to discuss the new show, Whitney. I had seen it, and I thought it was hysterically funny and humorous. I thought it was smartly written. I know you haven't discussed it very much so far, very good friend of mine, Robert Cadogan from Connecticut, writes for it. And being that he's a man, being able to write female humor, very proud to say that he did a great job. And I hope he continues to do so.
Let us pick up Whitney. And Whitney Cummings at the heart of this new NBC sitcom, based on what real-life experiences, sort of, and comedy routines of the creator and lead actress, Whitney Cummings. I'll take it to Mary and Maureen, but here's a little scene where Whitney and her boyfriend Alex, played by Chris D'Elia, bicker as they're getting ready to go to a wedding.
We're going to be late for the ceremony.
When's the last time a wedding actually started on time?
That's because they're always waiting for you.
Okay, yeah, I'm ready.
Wait, you're going to wear a hoodie to a wedding? What, were your overalls in the wash?
Okay, I almost froze to death at Nick and Rachel's wedding.
You mean the one that was in Mexico? Where the groomsmen wore shorts?
How dare you. You know that I have bad circulation, and it got worse after I got laser hair removal for you.
Okay, there's Whitney. Mary McNamara, what do you make of it? Whitney Cummings, famous for a really tough sense of humor. She can really wail, and she can be pretty raunchy. What do you think of Whitney?
It's very funny because it's been funny to watch the rise and fall of Whitney Cummings within like the 15 minutes that the shows have been on, because we were hearing about she's the it girl of TV because she's got two shows and she's hilarious. And then we hate her. We hate this show. It's the worst one ever. Two Broke Girls is much better. I didn't have hugely strong feelings about Whitney one way or the other. I was not overwhelmed, but I also didn't want to bang my head against the floor the way it made some people feel. The idea of a raunchy comedian going on TV, obviously she's not going to be quite as raunchy because, you know, the standards. But, the thing that bothered me about Whitney is that it's basically a comedy about marriage, only it's an anti-marriage comedy because they're not going to get married. So the question becomes, do you want to spend time with this couple? I wasn't, exactly seduced by the pilot, but I also wasn't totally repelled. I think, we have to be careful with sexual humor coming from women. I mean, obviously, I think that that's a huge breakthrough that women are allowed to have their own brand of sexual humor, which we didn't see previously. But we have to be careful that it's not just male sexual humor, tipped on its head, that it's basically humor that's being sold to male network executives, that it really is coming from women. And I wasn't convinced of that with Whitney.
Maureen, how about Whitney? And this new stripe of very broad, often raunchy humor, you think Bridesmaids, when you see it, you've got critics saying they've never heard the word vagina so many times in a slew of premieres as we have this year.
Well, again, I think it kind of goes back to the generational thing. Aisha kind of, noted that as well, that, as she's come up, things are kind of altering. And I think the big thing that we need to think about a little, is that one of the things we need to think about is that the networks are very much trying to keep pace with everything else that is competing for our entertainment time. And so, so things like Jersey Shore are not exactly setting the world on fire with their attention to manners and proper behavior, So I think there's definitely they see how well things like Bridesmaids has done. They see how well very crass reality tends to do. And, I think, Whitney had a moment is still having a moment, Whitney Cummings, as someone who is perceived as someone being of that generation, of that comedic ilk, who can kind of bring that to the networks. I think my problem with Whitney is that it almost tamed itself a little bit. I kind of felt like there's a very, very funny woman inside Whitney Cummings who wants to come out, but she's on an NBC sitcom that's not – it felt a little bit kind of musty to me in terms of some of the – characters around her felt like very stereotypical sitcom characters that weren't that funny, that the jokes seemed about 20 years old. So in a weird way, NBC usually has very smart comedy, single camera comedy, or that kind of fake documentary style. And I think she might have been better served by something like that. So I think the framing around Whitney Cummings kind of felt a little bit creaky to me. But she certainly can be funny. But I'm with Mary in that. And the two Whitney Cummings comedies for fall, Two Broke Girls, that central pairing of the two women made more sense to me. I kind of responded to that more than the whole Whitney and her boyfriend kind of agreeing not to get married and following that relationship. That relationship didn't have a ton of spark for me. And I think, you know, that's kind of crucial to that the success of that going forward.
Mary, have standards been changed by the networks? I don't know, by government oversight somewhere here? It seems like the language gets a lot more blue and wild on TV these days. Did that happen just in time for our, you know, big season of women?
Well, obviously, yes. The language, the vernacular has become more, not explicit, but we can say sucks on TV. I mean, when I was a kid, you couldn't say sucks. That was a swear word. Now it's like something that has become acceptable. And we see some words that are more acceptable on TV. I think, I want to follow up on what Maureen was saying is that with Whitney, I mean, she's a stand-up comedian who is inserting herself into basically a domestic, network television show. I believe she probably would have been better served to do something like what Louis C.K. is doing, but you can't do that on the network. I mean, and again, we come back to the question of what we will accept from women, the things that we will accept from men, we won't accept from women. I don't know that we would be ready to accept a character like Louis on Louis C.K. from a female comedian. It might be perceived as being, too degrading, too raunchy, too whatever. And so instead what you get is like trying to shoehorn, this very wild, foul-mouthed, but refreshingly honest character into an old template. But yes, I mean, obviously you can get away with things on network TV that you couldn't 20 years ago. I mean, people sleep in the same bed. It's like there is obvious, even if you cannot see sex, there's obvious sex is being had. I mean, Modern Family won its Emmy for the episode in which the children walked in on their parents. I mean, that certainly wasn't going to happen 10 years ago.
Yeah. Gary in Boston, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Gary.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just wanted to make an interesting observation is that you hardly at all see female characters portrayed as anti-heroes. And that's whether it's on network TV or on cable TV. I mean, there are a couple shows here and there, but I can't really think of any, like a Tony Soprano type female character, with a sort of questionable, morals and ethics and, it's very kind of shady. It's still very, that whole area is still very unexplored. I think maybe there's a Nurse Jackie or maybe Weeds, which is kind of gets into that territory a little bit, but it's still very limited in terms of a woman sort of having her own, that kind of character.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mary, what about it? When are we going to see the female Tony Soprano?
Absolutely. I when I was taking notes for this, I put no female anti-hero. The closest that we came was Mags Bennett on Justified, which was one of the best female characters that I've seen in a long time, and they killed her off, and I was just screaming out loud when they did that, because I was like, oh my gosh, this woman, we had never seen her before. She was, this backwoods, mobster mom, and it was, she was fabulous. It was Margot Martindale. She won the Emmy for it. But yes, that is exactly what I was trying to get to earlier. It's like, the anti-hero is the sort of the huge trend in drama, has been for years, and we won't let women go there. Nurse Jackie is probably the closest that we come, and I love that performance because we have, here's a woman who is a mom, who's also a drug addict, who's also a nurse. I mean, it's very complicated. Weed sort of did it a little bit too with the Mary Louise Parker character in United States of Terror. So you see it a little bit more on cable. You do not see it on network. But I totally agree with Maureen about Homeland. It's probably my favorite show this season. And because both the characters are they are equally nuanced, equally complicated, and could go either way. And you very rarely see that, the woman character where it's sort of like, is she crazy? She could be crazy. This could be a whole, all in her head. And the performance is amazing, but the writing is amazing too. And I'm hoping... when you were talking to Ilsa, it's like I wanted to say, one of the reasons we're seeing so many women on TV right now is the success of shows like 30 Rock and Parks and Recreation. Nothing, the network's like nothing more than success. And so if you have, strong female characters, complicated female characters, and people watch it, they'll do more. And so, I mean, Parks and Recreation, that's a whole new character. That Amy Poehler character, that optimistic, pie in the sky, not the jaded. I mean, Liz Lemon is more of a type. Love her, but she's more of a type where, oh, I'm insecure. I don't, wear big panties, blah, blah, blah. you know, the Amy Poehler character, Leslie Knope, is just she is just so refreshing, and that show has done so well. So that opens up people are going, oh, look at that. We could do
maybe
that
we could do
too.
That. We'll look for Claire Danes and Mandy Patinkin as her boss in Homeland when it comes. Jeannie in Cranston, Rhode Island. Thanks for calling, Jeannie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I was responding to what you were talking about in terms of The Good Wife. And I really enjoyed the last few seasons. And then the promos this year, you know, as you mentioned earlier, showing her as this very sensual figure, and there were little blurbs like, is the good wife good any longer? I watched it last night, and if this becomes the real focus, you've kind of lost me, because I just loved her development as a character, her strength, her her courtroom battles. But the whole thing with Will was so all-consuming of the episode that I was hoping that's not the direction.
You don't want the affair, the sort of sexual side coming on. That, no thanks for you, Jeannie.
That became so the focus that to me everything else kind of fell in the background, and I really liked the other aspects of her personality.
Maureen, why do you think they're going that way? Is that just TV responding to the market? Is that guys thinking what people want to see? What's going on?
I think that we always have to remember, especially with the broadcast networks, they are commercial enterprises. And, you know, we can sit here and all talk about how much we love The Good Wife, and I, you know, I'm with your caller. I love that show. It's one of my favorites. But it's not the number one scripted show on television. I mean, strangely enough, you know, CBS, I think, looks at that show a little bit and says, well, the demo's not what we would want. And, you know, they would love it if it was basically a different demo and higher ratings. I mean, to me, it's crazy that show doesn't get an automatic renewal every year. But the fact is, commercially, as far as CBS is concerned, it could be more successful. And especially as a show gets older, they want to literally sex it up. You know, it's either this or she adopts an adorable blonde little tyke. You know, I think that TV has a limited number of moves that it goes to when the executives start sweating about, you know, the future of a show. And it's either, oh, let's bring on a young, sexy prosecutor and, you know, or, you know, she adopts a young kid. I just think that's, you know, one way to get people talking is the relationship stuff. And I agree with your caller that if that begins to take over, what's appealing about that character is her multifaceted, complicated life. And if that sort of takes over the show, then that's not necessarily good.
Let me get one more call here. Anne in Malden, Massachusetts. Anne, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm 59 years old, and this is one of the reasons why I don't want to watch network TV, because I find it so degrading, it's so sexist. The Pan Am and the other new one, the Playboy Club, I mean, come on. They have no clue what we had to go through to get to where we are now. And in terms of the raunchy humor, I just think it's like the other woman said, it's upside-down male humor, and why do women have to do that? I don't get it.
And we've got it right here. They have no clue, you say. I'll take that to Mary and Maureen. But an interesting comment here from Julia online. She says she's 28 years old. She says she's also cringing at Pan Am. It's mostly about the tone they don't have right, she writes. They address backwardness with cuteness. And Julia writes, when a character with no depth addresses sexism in a cute way rather than exposing it as a truth the way Mad Men does, she writes, it almost promotes the old sexism all over again, dangerous and vapid. What do you say, Mary?
This is something I've written about and I was saying earlier. It makes me very nervous that we glamorize these time periods where, okay, the Pan Am logo was very beautiful.
Yeah.
And wasn't it nice when air
nice
travel wasn't like a huge nightmare? But on the other hand, you know, we had a lot of oppressed people still in the United States. And let's not even talk about racial diversity. I mean, it's all white, and that's all that, you know. So it's like, and we're even having the conversation right now about women, where you could have, I mean, you could just scream out loud about the lack of characters of color on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in all of these shows, I mean, you have to make choices, obviously. But yes, I think that there is like this glamorization of this time, and there's this assumption that somehow, you know, everything is great now. There is no sexism. Everybody is equal. And so now we can look back with to a kindlier, statelier time, you know, and you're just like, are you crazy? You know, this was not a time when it was glamorous.
I think that Pan Am's argument that becoming a stewardess was a viable career option and a liberating experience for certain women is a much better one than when the Playboy bunnies make it. But again, it's like you're talking about a select few women, and they also had to go through, you know, they had to put up with things that these days we'd be suing over. I mean, that they just smiled and bore. And again, you have like these modern girls who are like sassing back, and that's somehow supposed to make the audience feel better that like the Christina Ricci character is like sort of rolling her eyes at the, mm-hmm. at the guys, the co-pilot's advances in a way that is very modern. But back then it would have been a real issue. You know, you wouldn't have been able to do that. You wouldn't have been able to sass off to the co-pilots.
It just,
there was a hierarchy and the stewardesses were towards the bottom of it. And that's just the way it was.
It just wasn't going to happen, but you might not know it from the shows. And so we rewrite history. Maybe we enjoy the flight along the way, but what happens to the facts there? And yes, we've got a lot, we've got listeners here. Blue says, where are women of color in this new season? That may be a show in itself. They are not in this lineup, despite all the demographic change in this country. Really interesting. Well, there we are. Women, on the runway, taking off in all kinds of directions in this new season, and we're really grateful to the two of you for helping us watch them go. Maureen Ryan with AOL TV, thanks so much for spending the hour with us, Maureen. Great to have you.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And Mary McNamara with the LA Times. Mary, you're great. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed it.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hey, girl, what you doing?